Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution of the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Our guest today is my hero, New York State Senator Liz Krueger, a Democrat who represents the new 28th District. Krueger has served in the Senate since 2002. And if you want to find a single senator who is made up of 99% ethics, she's it. Liz Krueger, I always love having you with us. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me again, Alan. You're always so kind to me.
Not at all. For years, I was always the one who said that you were the good Krueger. You always gave me a hard time about it. Now the bad Krueger is off in jail, and nobody has been proven more right than I. He was the bad Krueger, and you are the good Krueger.
Well, I don't mind being the only Krueger at the moment. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, but of course, it was always spelled just a little differently. I never quite figured that out. I always have to look it up every time I write a column. Okay, let's talk about the important stuff. Nobody has been more outraged than me about certain things that are going on in New York State. And one of them is the idea that you have a Democratic Party, you have a Republican Party, you have a governor who, in my opinion, from day one, has wanted the Republicans to be in charge. But Liz Krueger goes out, she recruits good candidates along with Mike Gianaris, and you run them, and you win. You win fair and square. And then what they do is they find these four disaffected guys who I asked you about a long time ago. I said, would they ever coalesce with the Republicans? You said, no, they wouldn't dare. Well, they did. And I'm appalled, to be honest with you. And out comes the governor, and he says, all right, here's a list of things that this new coalition must accomplish, which they will. And that brings us up to what you think of the whole mess.
Well, I said they wouldn't coalesce with the Republicans, and I was wrong. But they made their deal. The irony is, they're sort of the exact same gang that gave us 2009. Remember, Dean Skelos, Tom Libous, Malcolm Smith, and Jeff Klein were the leaders of the two conferences in 2009, which then brought us the disaster of the Republican and outside-funded coup. And so now we have them sort of back again. And you're absolutely right. The challenge, since they have joined with the Republicans, is to prove that real progressive legislation actually comes to the floor and is passed. They say that's what they're going to do. The governor says that's what he expects them to do. So the proof is in the pudding. I'm waiting for real legislation, not pretend legislation with a nice name, and you know what I mean, Alan.
I do.
But I'm waiting for real minimum wage increase, real comprehensive public campaign financing, the Reproductive Health Act, the New York State Dream Act, reform of stop and frisk, real rent reforms, fair education funding for our schools, and mandate relief, because I actually know that's what the voters went to the voting booths and said they wanted, and voted in Democrats to be the majority in the state Senate, even though for the moment this strange bedfellows deal has resulted in our being the minority conference again. But 58% of the people who went to vote in New York State voted for Democrats. This is our agenda. This is what we would be fighting for if we were the majority. So the governor says he wants that too. The break-off five say that's what they want to. Let's watch it happen.
Okay, but I have a question for you. Clearly, if the Democrats, the real Democrats, had won, and if the governor, who clearly, in my mind, set this up by not sticking to his guns on who would draw the districts, he said he would veto any act that wasn't done by an outsider. He didn't do it. Okay, I thought that indicated he was really wanted Dean Skelos as the leader. Maybe I'm wrong. Certainly, they tell me I'm wrong. So if that's the case, if the Democrats had been allowed to take office, you guys would have passed all that legislation. Who needed a rump group of Democrats to do that? Are you following me? It's inarticulate.
No, I agree with you completely. Yeah. And as you know, I was outraged about the gerrymandered redistricting, which was a reversal of commitment by the governor, who said he would only support fair redistricting. Clearly, that's not what we got. If we had fair redistricting, you would have seen significantly more Democrats win.
And if that was the case, then those four guys who sold out for some committee chairmanships and some other things, they wouldn't have been able to, you know, do what they're doing now.
Yes, I believe that you're correct.
Okay. So what happens? I mean, every 2 weeks we're hearing Skelos will be the president of the Senate, that's the Republican, for 2 weeks. Then the next 2 weeks, Mr. Klein will be the leader. And then 2 weeks later, so you'll have to get stuff done within those 2 weeks.
We don't know anything but the press release. The devil's in the details. What are the rules brought to the floor of the Senate going to say? I'm going to be asked to vote on those rules. Are they going to offer equal distribution of power to bring bills to the floor? Are they going to allow fair distribution of resources to all 63 senators, opportunities for all 63 senators to bring bills to the floor? You know, at its simplest, you have a great beginning question. Every 2 weeks, will Jeff Klein control what bills come to the floor? So can I please have the Reproductive Health Act come to the floor during his 2 weeks? Because I know it's not coming during Dean's 2 weeks. I know the Dream Act isn't coming during Dean's 2 weeks. So is Jeff going to bring the Dream Act to the floor? Because then he needs to get the votes from the Democrats to pass those bills. Because let's be honest, are the Republicans going to reverse themselves on decades of positions and not and suddenly decide they support public financing? They suddenly support reproductive health? They're going to raise wages to a living wage for the workers of New York State? These are all the bills that they have fought for decades. So great, Jeff Klein has the power to bring those bills to the floor. I'm waiting for him.
This is really remarkable. Malcolm Smith was one of the reasons that Jeff Klein said that he was getting out of the regular Democratic Party. Now he's joined by the very same Malcolm Smith. How could this be?
Well, that's why my earlier point was the gang of 2009 is back again. What I know is the Democratic Conference has over 12 new members. We're still waiting to seat two of them, Terry Gibson and Cecilia Ketchik. We have gotten rid of the bad apples, the worst players. Carl Krueger, Pedro Espada, and Hiram Montserrat are all either in or on their way to federal prison and are never coming back into electoral politics. I am proud of the Democratic Conference. It's a great group of senior senators and new blood that came in 2010 and 2012. We're excited and committed to an agenda that I know the majority of the state wants to see moved, that I know my colleagues in the Assembly want to see moved. This right now may be a hiccup in our ability to pass our agenda, but again, history is long, and as you well know, changes in politics in New York State are never very long in between and often a surprise. So this is not the outcome for this week that I would have hoped or believed that the people of New York State wanted. I don't think it's going to be a successful model, but if they pass the critical legislation I believe the state needs, I'm prepared to reevaluate. But right now, I do not see how this is happening. I mean, Tom Libous was already quoted in his local newspaper saying he doesn't see the Republican legislative agenda changing. I don't see it changing either, which is why the New York voted for Democrats to run the state Senate.
Well, but the problem is, okay, Liz, now you're sitting there, you've got a Democratic conference, new people, older, senior people, and now you're going to have a choice. They're going to bring up, Jeff Klein will bring up in his 2 weeks, let's say, the idea of raising the minimum wage. When he brings that up, will the Democrats reward his so-called perfidy in dealing with the Republicans by voting on the issue?
I believe that Democrats will vote on their principles on the issues. What I am much more concerned about is that bills that have been watered down, mm-hmm. that are pretend bills with the right titles, are passed, and that it is critical for us to all watch carefully and understand that a bill called Clean Skies was actually a pro-pollution bill, that a bill could be called reproductive health that, in fact, does absolutely nothing that it is supposed to, that campaign finance reform can be watered down to be irrelevant and not be public financing and clean elections, and that no one should allow themselves to be fooled or to allow themselves to believe incremental change is the best you can do. Here's the problem with that, and you know this, Alan.
Sure.
You rarely get the bite at the apple at all in Albany, and you only get one per decade. So do not let a pretend bill that calls itself by the right name pass the legislature.
So you'll be willing.
I'm quite confident the assembly won't fall for that either, but Democrats in the Senate are not going to take the blame if they call out fake bills.
So will you stand up at the point at which it is a fake bill as a group and say, we're not going to vote for this and take whatever political risks there are because we believe this is watered down?
I believe the Senate Democrats, particularly the new conference, is incredibly strong, principled, and together on what it is voters elected us to do and what our jobs are as senators.
Now, what's the mood?
And I think you know I have no problem getting up on the floor of the Senate and debating the details of legislation.
What's the mood of the Democratic group? I mean, are they angry?
We haven't all seen each other. Obviously, there's been lots of conversations in the last 48 hours.
Yeah.
I think among new senators, there's a, what happened here? How could that be? Among older senators, there's a combination of disappointment, but perhaps not that much surprise.
Now, they picked off four Democrats. Is there any chance that you guys will play the same game and start picking off either Republicans or people in that conference? Because clearly you're on a trajectory in which the Democrats, you know, maybe 2 years from now, will get enough people to be able to take the Senate.
Well, I always say, both and to voters also, you know, when they say, I'm really sorry I'm a Republican, I don't believe in it, I like the Democrats better, I always tell them it's very simple to solve that problem. They get a voter registration form and they check off a new box. The Democratic Party is open and welcoming and is, as they say, a big tent party. So if any of my Republican colleagues want to wake up tomorrow and say, this isn't really the party for me anymore, I'm happy to have a conversation.
I'll have a conversation. And would you be willing to do what the other guys did and say, okay, and if you come over to our side, we play Capture the White Flag, we're going to make you a committee chairman.
Okay. For me, the discussion is, are they prepared to become a member of the Democratic Conference, not have a discussion about this sort of concept of the coalition model? Mm-hmm. Now, I was never opposed to members of both parties being chairs of committees, so that's not really the issue for me. The issue is, are you prepared to sit in the Democratic Conference as a Democrat?
Let's talk a little bit about fracking. I hear a lot about it here. It's a statewide issue. I wonder where you are and where your conference is.
Well, again, my conference has many new members that will not be there till January, and so I can, and I will not speak for any of them. But as we were leaving the last session, it was very clear that the majority of Senate Democrats were range from there shall be no fracking whatsoever at this point in time because it has not proved to be safe, through to there should be a series of bills passed that require transparency, much more restrictions on what kind of chemicals can be used, communities' right to say no, not in my backyard, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm quite confident that as we left, or as we technically are leaving the 2012 legislative session, the vast majority of Democrats are not in support of an open-door policy for moving forward with fracking.
You're on the Finance Committee. We saw the governor go down to Washington and ask for, what, $42 billion. Obviously, New York is hurting. It has some major problems as a result of Sandy. How bad is it?
We took an enormous financial hit from Sandy and an enormous hit to our infrastructure. I have no reason to doubt that the $42 billion number is a factual number. And the question is, how much can we get from the federal government in relief? How much can we make sure the insurance companies actually pay out to the policyholders? Because I am hearing daily that insurance companies are arguing against making the payments, and that's a huge issue. And every time an insurance company fails to follow through on their commitment, it becomes a government/community responsibility to put the money in. So we are actually in a technical policy fight on who is obligated to make these payments. Of course, this all ties into our failure as an international society to confront global warming and the impacts it is having on whether we have to. I mean, Alan, I just can't emphasize enough. It's going to take 10 years of serious work by government at all levels to truly evaluate and move forward with the kind of infrastructure adjustments that need to be made because of the changes being caused by the increased water levels on the eastern seaboard and the increasing impact of heavier and heavier storms caused by global warming. We can do everything right, which we haven't. We're not reversing this. We need to confront that we have a whole new, very complicated and unfortunately very expensive set of assignments to deal with unless we as a country want to say, goodbye, East Coast, everybody take a 10-mile step in towards the middle of the country. Right. And I don't really think we're going to do that.
Well, you can't do it. I grew up on Fire Island. You can't do it and leave Long Island exposed to the Atlantic Ocean if Fire Island's underwater.
Well, you know, Long Island is clearly in a seriously complicated environmental and tide rising situation. Lower Manhattan, you know, again, all the water surges right up to hit Lower Manhattan. You know, the Rockaways and Staten Island really are Katrina-like impacts. And I don't, you know, I think we all know that, but people need to understand it's the equivalent of what happened in Katrina for specific sub areas of our state.
You know, you just made me think of going back to a question about the organization of the Senate. How is it decided how many seats are on every committee? In other words, how many Democrats, how many Republicans?
Under the old rules, it was a weighted average of the distribution of Republicans and Democrats.
Right.
Then mid-session last year, or 2 years ago now, I guess, Dean Skelos realized, absent a member being out sick, the minority actually could successfully vote down things in committee. So he quickly, literally in the middle of the night, changed the rules for the two most important committees, finance and rules, so that the Republicans, rather than having a weighted fair distribution of members, had a weighted distribution of members plus one. So it's, you know, the when I said the devil's in the details, everyone should be staring at the rules that are brought to the floor on the first day of session.
Now that, of course, means that your rogue group under Jeff Klein, those four would have been Democrats, are now going to be in a position to insist on how these committees are weighted. Will they get appointments to these committees, or how's that going to work?
Oh, I'm sure they will. And by the way, I'm not saying they shouldn't, but I'm saying if they're 5/63 of the Senate, which is technically what they are, there are five of them now, are they going to get 5/63 of the membership in the committees? That's what they should get. But will the rules say that? I mean, who's going to, so we speak, gerrymander the rules of the Senate to give themselves inequitable power?
Well, up to now, they've gotten away with that kind of stuff, as you have just pointed out.
Yes. Well, so again, everyone, I mean, you think, oh, the rules of the Senate, why should I possibly care about that? Two things happen the first day of session, which are the most important decisions that are made for the following 24 months. Who is the leader of the Senate, and what rules are we operating under? So everybody gets fixated on what the governor says in the state of the state, and I get how important that is, and I get fixated on that. But the other thing, I would argue, of equal importance to the state of New York that happens right before we go into the state of the state, or maybe the day after, are the vote for leader and the rules of the Senate.
Something gave me agitated the other day. Somebody came up to me and said, I heard Liz Krueger is going to quit because she's so angry at the way things have turned out. Don't do that.
They weren't talking to me.
Maybe it was wishful thinking.
Well, you know, as Bob Herbert just said when I listened to him speak earlier, you know, where are progressive leaders? Shame on them. There are not enough of them. They're not doing their job well.
Remind
I got
everybody.
Up right after and said, you know what? Thank you for saying that. You're absolutely right. I took this job. I made a commitment. I have to do better, but I'm no victim. I have to figure out how I fight every day for what I believe in on behalf of the people who elect me to office.
Would you remind everybody who Bob Herbert is?
Bob Herbert is, actually, he was an editorial writer and columnist for the New York Times.
Oh, yes,
of course. Who has now either taken a leave or has actually left, and he's writing a book about this country and poverty. And he's a breathtakingly brilliant man who is so articulate about the key issues that we must be confronting as a country. So I guess I'm not getting paid, and he doesn't even have the book out yet, but if you can read anything by Bob Herbert, go and find it right now.
Okay, so let me ask you this, because I'm so fascinated and I can't get away from it. If somebody who is an alleged Democrat now becomes, whatever you want to call it, sellout, whatever, to the Republicans, how do they run for higher political office like governor or attorney general after they've done something like that? Does it stick to them forever?
You know, I don't have a crystal ball, so I don't know. I do know that when you look at the country, the parties seem to be very far apart in ideology and where we believe we're going as a country. And people are passionate about the directions we need to go and believe in parties and the differences between them. So some people apparently think it's post-party or post-partisan now here in New York State. Look, I don't agree with everything in the Democratic Party. I can get really mad at Democrats. But I know I'm not a Republican, and I know why I'm not a Republican, and I know what the core principles of the Democratic Party are and what I believe in. Now, I don't know how much of the public shares that view about whether or not party matters. I'm equally concerned about the fact that nobody seems to be voting anymore at all, and so we're allowing a small minority of moneyed interests to control our election process and really be determining who is our leadership. And so my priority, my top priority, is campaign finance reform. We have to get money out of politics. We have to reverse the Citizens United decision at the federal level. There are a variety of ways to do it, but we have to take back our democracy by making sure that a couple of people prepared to spend petty cash for them, but millions and millions of dollars do not determine the government of this country or the state.
Is it possible that we could get that this year?
Yes.
Amazing. Well, I hope that you're right about this one. Our wonderful guest, the good Krueger, on the Capitol Connection has been New York State Senator Liz Krueger, a Democrat in office since 2002. Liz, we love you and we thank you so much for being with us. It's always a great pleasure to have you and hear it straight from you.
Thank you, and I'm honored to be your guest.
The Capitol Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. Ian Pickus is producer of The Capitol Connection, a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in Albany. Support for The Capitol Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign. Online at nyscasa.org.